This is episode number 4 with Tizar Firmansha, partner at Colibra Capital. Welcome to the Masters of Cashflow podcast. My name is Andrew Senduk, a former banker turned tech entrepreneur, and in each episode, I interview the movers and shakers of the venture capital and investment space in Southeast Asia, with the only goal to help you discover how to raise more capital, build better companies, and to give you a better understanding of the people behind the biggest funds in the region. Thank you so much for spending time with me today. Now let's get started. Well, good day, beautiful people. Welcome to another session. I'm excited to have my guest, Tizar Firmansha, on the show. We've been trying to plan this session for a few weeks, and finally we're here. Tizar is, I would say, a real investment professional. You've been in the game for a long time. First stepping into the PE industry with Credence Investments, which is actually a Singaporean PE fund, of which Mr. Xiao Kiat Wang is actually one of the co-founders, who I've met recently as well. Really nice, nice gentleman. And since the last 3-4 years, you've been now partner at Colibra Capital. Tizar, how is life?
Well, this is still a COVID situation. I'm still surviving with all this thing, but I guess now everything is much better. So I'm very much optimistic now still,
Very good. How have the last, 12, 18 months, how has it been for you personally and for the fund? Like, what's been going on? I can imagine, I mean, the whole world is impacted, right? And I think also like portfolio companies, but how has it been for you, like juggling and trying to keep the boat afloat and the portfolio going? What's been going on?
Well, when the COVID actually came in March last year, it was difficult personally because I have been also, somebody close to my family got affected, and then we didn't know what to do at that time. But then, of course, now show must go on, and we need to learn about how to adapt to the situation.
Yeah.
And for our fund and our portfolio, back in March last year, we quickly had a call with each one of them to actually understand what we can actually do to avoid all the unnecessary things if this corona will actually stay too long.
And how was that? Like, was it, I mean, as an investor, how much can you push in that sense? Or how much can you really, how can you guarantee that the companies will make the right decisions, especially in that critical time? Can you make sure that they're doing the right things or taking the right measurements to keep the boat afloat and to keep, you know, keep their cash efficient as well?
Well, in Colibra, we always believe in collaboration. So at the very beginning, we put a lot of focus in terms of getting to know the founders and also getting to know the management really well, so that we have to have a chemistry at the first place.
Yeah.
And so that is very important, because during this difficult time, then we roughly know who they are, how they will react, and how they will think in facing several situations.
Yeah.
So for us, it's never about pushing our agenda to our portfolio company, but then we really want to become brainstorming partners, collaborating with them, thinking about solutions.
Yeah.
And it really depends. It really, we really want to be the cheerleader for them.
Yeah.
So it's not about right decision or wrong, but it's about how we can actually stimulate the right conducive environment for us to come up with a great solution.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. So you don't want to push your agenda like into the faces of the entrepreneurs, but you're trying to like just support them actually in making the right decisions as well. Maybe can you share a bit more about Colibra, like you know, how it started, like who your partners are, and where the fund is at the moment?
So Colibra started in 2018 by myself and my two other co-founders, Leon and Nova. Leon is actually happened to be also the co-founder of Tokopedia, and Nara is from the Ciputra family.
Yeah.
And I guess the reason why we have this calling to start up Colibra, because we really want to be an active investor. We really want to collaborate, and we really want to roll up our sleeve when we work with our portfolio companies. And this is something difficult to find at this at that time if we want to directly invest in startup. So not many VC share the same kind of view and mindset. That's why we thought that if we really want to focus on investing in startup, we should directly do it ourselves.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned earlier, that the spirit of Colibra is actually a collaboration, and that's the reason why we name it Colibra as well, because it rhymes with collaboration, although the real meaning of it is actually a hummingbird in English.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. And because we just want to find a name that really rings with the collaboration, but we couldn't find anything, but then somewhat this word and when we Google up about hummingbird, it has a good philosophy that it is a hardworking bird with they also could actually survive with only 40% food intake during difficult time.
Really?
So the story actually, so these kind of things somewhat is similar with entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
That you have to continuously work hard, and during difficult times, you have to be able to survive at all costs.
Yeah, for sure. And if you look at Colibra, like what is kind of like your main investment segments or ticket sizes? Do you focus on a specific size and ticket or a specific industry that you are highly bullish about?
So we actually are very agnostic in terms of the segment or industry. In terms of the focus, we actually prefer to invest in Series A company if it is Indonesian company. For foreign company, non-Indonesian company, we prefer for the company to be at least Series B. And the investment ticket is actually really depends on case-by-case basis. So it varies between just $100,000 US dollars to $1.5 million US dollars at this point in time, depending on the situation. But then again, this is case by case. So we don't have a specific formula in terms of what kind of average ticket size that we would write.
Yeah.
And in terms of like industry, I mean, although I mentioned that it is agnostic, but really the main focus is really whether we can actually be helpful to the founders. So if they come up with a business idea and when they pitch to us, the reason why we invest in them is not only because this is really an interesting proposal, but we can really do something to really help them to implement that idea.
And if you look at the VC space, right, I'd love to have your thoughts as well as a quote unquote younger VC, which is now like 3 years, 3-4 years active, right? The market is so evolving, but when you look at global venture capital from a macro perspective, right? Say 250, 260 billion is invested into startups globally, and of that number, more than 50% is in the US, right? Where maybe especially in Silicon Valley area, I think every block has a different VC, and I see VCs popping up there every week, every month. There's like a new VC coming out of the ground. Like, how do you see the VC space within the region, within Indonesia and in Southeast Asia in the coming, let's say, 5 years? How do you see that evolve? And even in the last 3 years, like what's kind of like your take on, you know, new capital coming into the business, into the country, and the funding climate in general?
I guess venture capital follows the startup, right? I mean, like startup industry is always about something new, about the way to do things, new way to do things. And of course, it has to be followed by the investors as well. So when there are new investors or venture capital firm coming up, I think it shouldn't be, it will not be necessarily be a bad thing, because then there are different type of investors coming up that will be supporting different ideas.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, if it is always about the traditional investors, then we will never see what kind of new companies that we saw today. Yeah. It's really good to have people that's relevant people to come to support new ideas. And for us, when we saw this landscape in Southeast Asia and Indonesia, I think, yeah, we are still way behind from the one in the US, because they just been around for many years before us.
Yeah.
And in terms of like the ecosystem, education, and manpower, everything over there is still much more complete than over here.
Yeah.
But then our focus is really to help not only Indonesian company, but also foreign company, global company that would like to expand into Indonesia. Because I guess Indonesia, being a developing country, also has its own charm in terms of the huge population, the younger population, and then the economic spending. And we are one of the biggest economy in ASEAN or Southeast Asia country.
Yeah.
So, and with the past 10 years with the global crisis, COVID and everything else, somewhat Indonesia still become, it still is interesting target, interesting or destination for anyone who like to start their own business or expand their business. Yeah, because of the positive things that we have.
So high growth potential. And I think that's always the most interesting thing, right? And just like any type of startup, which usually at the story stage or maybe like pre-revenue, there's a lot of, still a lot of guessing, right? About what's going to happen next month or next year. And I think on a macro level, you would say Indonesia has so much variables, which if treated well and if developed in a proper way, right, that has so much potential on where the economy as a whole can go towards. But I think you mentioned something really critical where we say like, okay, compared to the US, the ecosystem, people and education is still in development. It's still in development. Yeah. It's still not yet where, let's say, the West is or where the US is. What do you think? Right? And I think people and education is, I think, really crucial, especially when you talk about building ventures. You do that with people. So you need to have, you guys invest in people, in founders and in entrepreneurs.
Yes.
What do you think Indonesia should do as a whole, right? Or what do you think would be the main challenge or obstacle for Indonesia to step towards another maturity stage when it comes to the tech landscape? Because you mentioned like two specific things, right? Education and people. So what, when we talk about those two specific things, what do you think is, what needs to be done for those two aspects, education and people, to be a catalyst, of innovation, to be a catalyst of a new generation of entrepreneurs and value creation?
Well, yeah, actually, I started my venture capital career actually back in the US in 2007. Yeah. So I used to work for a venture capital company in Washington, D.C. And in the U.S., actually, at the time, there were actually three hubs of venture capital. The first one is, of course, Silicon Valley. The second one is Washington, D.C. And then the third one is more on the North Carolina area. And what I see, what I've been observing in the past 10 years or so, when startups started to flourishing here in Indonesia, I guess it's, if I have to compare to human when we were just born until we become an adult.
Yeah.
So I guess it's always about a self-discovery findings. So it's necessary for people to make mistakes. It's necessary for people to fail so that we can really know what it feels to be wrong, to be failed, to do mistake in order to find a good solution and be successful.
Yeah.
So I guess Indonesia is developing quickly in that sense, whereby in the US it takes many, many years, but then with this technology, with only just 10 years, we have so many unicorn that was part of the collection in this world.
Yeah.
So I guess Indonesia is really not way behind, but then I guess really to have really a stronger startup ecosystem, it really comes with the right mindset from every part of the player, stakeholders. For example, from the startup founders themselves, when they start business, it should be motivated by the real passion to solve problems, to make the company that's really useful for many people. Mm. Not only just want to be get rich quickly or become a unicorn or become a conglomerate. So that's, I think, it's not a wrong motivation, but it might not be the one that will help you to stay strong, especially during difficult time, right? And of course, from the investor's point of view also, I think we also need to understand that when we do this, it's not always about making money, but really how we can contribute to the society. I mean, like when we invest in a company, then the company gets bigger, it can create more employment, then it can actually motivate people to seek for the education, and the education its system itself will also be, they want also to stay relevant with whatever going on in the market. So this is like a whole effort from every stakeholder. It's not just like one person can do everything, but it has to be a combination of everyone join forces to contribute.
I love that. So it's kind of like everyone in the value chain should, in that sense, evolve their thinking from just a shining objects, high valuation, high exit type of thinking towards more like an impact type of mindset, right? That any entrepreneur or any startup, they're solving a problem for people. And I think that at the end of the day is the foundation of everything. And
not only the impact, but also the fundamental of doing business. Because I guess what many people forgot is like when we do business, it has to solve problem. And the most important thing, it has to make profit.
Yeah, exactly. That's a very good, very good bridge. I mean, we talked about it, I think, before our previous interview. We chatted a few times about this as well. And I hear you also saying, oftentimes your feedback is also like, okay, but are these guys making money? Yes or no, right? And so how do you deal with that? I mean, from an LP perspective, let's say from an multiplier perspective, right? An exit perspective. Because for a VC, for you to make money, you need to have a good exit, right? That's kind of like where the business model is. To have a good exit, ideally you have a high multiplier. Mm-hmm. But of course, the high multiplier is correlated with the risk also that you take.
Yes.
High multiplier, right? That's kind of like the basic principles. Mm-hmm. The moment you say that, okay, companies need to be profitable, or at least very close to profitability, will impact then the multiplier. Is that correct or not?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. We can use multiplier as a benchmark.
It's a benchmark, right? So how do you, is it difficult to manage also the expectations of LPs when it comes to this type of exits that, you know, they are also hoping for, right? They're hoping for a big exit. They're hoping for a big multiplier where they say, oh, well, let's say I put in $500,000 through Colibra because they are LP in the fund. But they also have expectations on the returns that they're going to get. Yeah. Is it difficult to sometimes balance the expectation from the investor, the LP, versus the performance of the portfolio? You know, you have that in a bit of a quote unquote realistic balance between expectation and reality.
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. Because this has been like, to me, it's always like a chicken and egg problem.
Yeah.
Because I have to attract investment from the investor, there must be something interesting. So interesting promise, for example, good return, exciting return.
Yeah.
5 times return, 10 times return.
Exactly.
Times
return. Yeah.
And sometimes how unrealistic it is, but then it really interests people, motivate people to really jump into this new world.
This space, yeah.
Yeah. So I guess that's also related to, again, the previous question that you asked me about what it is needed for the ecosystem of venture capital to flourish. I guess the LP should also have a good expectation, why they actually want to come to this industry.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, venture capital is another asset class.
Yeah.
That also belongs to the same asset class as private equity.
Yeah.
When it's a long-term investment, and it should, as you're right, it's high risk, high return.
Mm.
But we should also to understand like the situation. We cannot really put, a rigid ruler to measure everything. It has to be dynamically.
Yeah.
Modified based on the situation and based on the location and so on.
Mm.
And I guess many of the investors, sometimes when they came to me, oh, we invested in startup before and then we failed and all our investment failed.
Mm.
So because really venture capital, startup investment, it's really like it's like a young, you need a young parents, dedicated young parents to actually take care of the baby. So it's not, it's different from investment in private equity.
Yeah.
And if I compare to the analogy with parents and baby, in private equity, you are investing in graduate students.
Yeah.
So they are not babies anymore. They are adults, can think about themselves, they can make decisions themselves. But then, startup company is only 3 years old, 5 years old. So that's why I'm comparing it to the baby, not because I think you get what I mean, right?
Yeah,
the analogy.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So this is something that many LP didn't actually understand, that in startup investment is totally different from every type of investment.
Yeah.
Although it is similar to private equity, but it needs a lot of nurturing. It needs a lot of more time-consuming time to communicate with everyone.
Yeah.
Because we have to understand that the startup founders, they are juggling their life with all different challenges every day. They have to compete with the big boys.
Yeah.
They struggle every day. They think about the burn rate that they have to keep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They have to motivate people.
Yeah.
They have to hustle and win pitching every day.
Yeah.
So it's really tough.
Yeah.
So as venture capital, our job is not only about investing in the right people, but also becoming their friends and becoming their supporter. So if we want to really invest in startup, we must actually have enough time or enough bandwidth to deal with all those things.
Yeah.
So it's different, like investing in stock exchange, that we can just invest and then wait for 20 years, sleep on it, and then suddenly, oh, we get good dividend or good capital gain.
Yeah.
So over here, it can happen that way, but then I guess we should be more prepared as well. Yeah.
Such a good point, right? Because it comes down to, let's say the VC space, it's not just about writing checks. The VC space is investing. It's writing checks plus doing your best as a firm, as a VC firm, to support your portfolio companies to evolve, to progress, and to go to the next level, right? So let's dig down into that, right? When it comes to, let's say, after writing a check, you invest in a company. What type of support does Colibra give to the startups? Like, how does that practically work? I mean, you go to the companies, you sit with the founders, what, every week, or like how involved is that relationship?
Yeah. So actually, our involvement really starts when we first get to know them, because In Colibra, our motto, actually, there are three things. Is first is to collaborate, second is to nurture, and third, to deliver. So we actually spend a lot of time at the beginning to really get to know each other really well. So we are quite proud that when we invest in a company, we really know them much deeper than perhaps many other investors. Yeah. Because for us, it's really important to have a good chemistry and really get to know them really well, so that when difficult time situation, when difficult situation happen, we are not learning about them, but we already knew them, and we can actually react faster. Otherwise, we when bad situation happen, we are actually learning while actually trying to help. And that's not the best way to do it. So normally when we invest in a company, it takes about 3 months to really get to know them. It's perhaps longer than many other VCs, but then because for us, it's not really about a number games. We are not truly playing roulette, invest in 100 companies, hoping that one company will win. We are not playing FOMO, like fear of missing out, that this is trending topic that we have to be part of it, of this topic now. Otherwise we will be this will be forgotten or something like that. We are not those kind of people. So and that's why we put a lot of commitment at the beginning before we actually write the check to really get to know them and put up a lot of resources also to find out how we can actually be useful to them. And so on. And of course, when we after we write a check, the we still we are not although we want to be an active investors, but we are not the one that drives the company. We still think that the founders are the one that should drive the company, and the ideas should be decided everything by the founders themselves and the management themselves. So our support is really more as a cheerleader. But then, of course, sometimes it's really difficult to have a boundary when we want just a cheerleader to be a cheerleader, or we want to be a supporter. And this is something that we have to be careful as well. And we try our best not to cross the boundary and to be the driver of the company. So as much as it is needed, as much as it is possible, we also want to be just quiet, do nothing. Because who doesn't want that, of course, right? But then at the in monthly basis, we keep in touch with everyone, even every company, to get what who they are, what they are. And sometimes when we have different opinion, we just try to communicate and stimulate and challenge the founders. But then they're still okay if they still want to do whatever things that against were. Because our role is really just to be a supportive investor. Because at the day, this is their dreams, this is their companies, this is their baby. So they have the full rights to do whatever what they want to the company.
Execute on their vision. But I love what you said. Like, I think when you look at the VC space, let's say maybe 6-7 years ago, there's a very clear like a spray and pray type of strategy, right? Where there's a lot of, let's say early stage, early stage. So people that were there, let's say 2013-14, who've been investing back then, I think there was a lot of, a lot of like small tickets, 30-40 companies, and they just let's just see which one is going to take off. And the comparison with the roulette table is I think very, very evident there, right? But when you, I was reading an article about VC investing, and they also made the comparison with quote unquote gambling in that sense. But of course, as a firm, you wanna, it is in that sense, it is investing in something. So you don't know what the future is going to bring, right? That's with any type of investment. But you wanna mitigate that risk by cheerleading, or by at least inputting, you know, giving the right inputs to the founders so they make well-calculated decisions for the company. Yeah. Right? These are, when we look at, let's say, different industries. So I know Colibra is kind of like sector agnostic, and ticket size, you know, could be 100,000 to 1 million plus. But bro, do you personally are you personally interested in, you know, 2-3 industries where you say like, okay, you know, in the coming 5 to 10 years in Indonesia or Southeast Asia, this segment is, I really believe that this segment is going to go big.
Well, I wish I have that goal that I can really pinpoint what will be the best industry to focus on. Yeah. But then I guess I started with the biggest problems. I guess in Indonesia, what has been interesting is the logistic, the infrastructure.
Yeah.
So I think it is still a sector that still needs a lot of improvement.
Yeah.
And a lot of problems to be addressed. So I guess when the right people can really address this problem, it can be very much interesting.
Yeah.
Actually, until today, we haven't really invested in the logistics space, but we believe that this is very problematic, a lot of problems to be solved, and then a lot of money to be made if you can, do it right.
Yeah.
And other than that, I think Indonesia also a country with a lot of population, a lot of younger population. But unfortunately, the education is not on par with the one in the US or any other developed country. So I guess this is also an interesting sector.
Yeah.
But then I guess I really hope that the company we would like to invest in shouldn't be just a feature company, but something that can really change the whole thing, become a game changer. Because right as of today, we still cannot decide where to invest in this education sector. And the third one that's quite important, I guess really important for Indonesia, is really to address the bottom of the pyramid, the blue collar worker. Because I guess, although Indonesia is a very rich country, huge population, huge economy, but then a big chunk of the population is really still below average segment. So I guess if we can really address this problem, help to make these people wealthier and then happier, so more educated. And I guess this is not only important, good for the country, but also for all the stakeholders in this startup ecosystem in Indonesia.
Yeah, I love that. I love that.
Also want to quote something, because I remember just now you mentioned about an article that it's a fine line between gambling and venture capital investment. It is true. Venture capital investment can be a gambling. And this is something when I told everyone not to invest in startup if you don't have the time. Because if you don't have the time, and then people pitch to you, and then, oh, I like your idea, and then I write the check right now. We are doing any preparation work, without doing due diligence, or you invest in a company and then in 2 weeks time you do the decision and without a lot of study, then I think it is a gamble. It is gambling. But then if you do a lot of preparation and a lot of study, at least you have done your own feasibility study, and that's a more educated risk rather than just going to the war with any preparation.
Exactly. I think what you said, I think VC investing is just another asset class, right? So if people want to put their money in stock market, or you know, in real estate, or they want to put it into startups, it requires the same type of preparation. Any type of investment that you do without any preparation is a full gamble. And and anything in the future, yeah, who knows what tomorrow's we're going to bring, right? So from a fund perspective, I mean, like we said before, the market is evolving. There's more capital flowing in from outside of Indonesia into the region, into Indonesia, into Southeast Asia. How do you keep evolving as a fund? Like, what's kind of like your idea on how Kolibra can keep evolving and keep growing their impact and portfolio?
Actually, every year, I myself learn a lot about running the fund. Yeah, because every year, or every the end of the year, we have to reflect what we did right or we did wrong in this year, how we could improve. And we communicated that in our annual investor meeting with our LP every year. So I guess, we have been evolving also. Although our spirit is really to collaborate with people, but then, for example, it is really difficult to collaborate. So the first thing to do is really about communication.
Yeah.
So, for example, we try to improve our way to communicate our ideas to portfolio people, to portfolio company, or everyone who met us and pitch their ideas to us. So I guess communication is a key, and that has been something that we have implemented and learned, and perhaps we still need to improve ourselves. I'm not saying that I'm already perfect in doing that. And the second thing is that we have been evolving is adapting with COVID situation. Because for us, when we want to collaborate, it is interesting. It is very important to get to know the person behind the wheel. And it means we have to know the background of the person. And it's really difficult if we just have this kind of Zoom call or video call. So because by doing that, we really cannot see your body language. We cannot really know you as a person. With this kind of COVID situation, we actually struggle a lot. I mean, like how to really get to know the person. But we
look
cannot
them in the eye. Look them in the eye. I can imagine. But have you written any checks like virtually like this?
We did last year. We did last year, but then of course, we have known that person for 5 years. Maybe it didn't really count because we know the founders really well for the past years. We actually almost wrote a check this year, and it has been like just a virtual meeting. But then we decided that the face-to-face cannot be compromised. So I personally I actually drove to Yogyakarta to get to know the founder, to meet them. And because it's really different when you actually having a conversation like this, and when you having dinner or having lunch together with that person, you can see the other angle of that person. So, and that's why I'm saying that we are struggling. We are trying to evolve. We still haven't found the right recipe yet. But then at the end of the day now, at least we already implemented like working from home. Now everyone can actually be empowered to do their responsibility at home, and we can do the diligence from far. But then at the end of the day, we still struggle to eliminate the human touch.
Well, maybe that's also not something. Is it really something that you need to eliminate? Right, that's also a question. I think it's also you need to, right? At the end of the day, if you put in money into someone, I think it's more than reasonable that at least you look them in the eye and see if these people are legit or not, right? But teaser, that's a good point, right? So how big is the Kolibra Capital team right now in Jakarta? Like, how many people are there?
So I have three analysts, I have two interns, I have one actually venture partner in Singapore.
Okay.
Yeah. So we try to have to keep the team very lean.
Yeah.
And yeah. Because all the other support function we outsource to third party.
Yeah.
So then we just keep the investment team.
Yeah. Perfect. And do you think that because I think what you just described, let's say you there is a potential deal. You look at the deck, you know, you do your DD, you do everything that you need to do up until the physical meeting, and then potentially you could write a check, yes or no. But do you think that process would actually be a realistic SOP? I mean, in this world we live in right now for VCs to do it that way, to do, let's say, 95% of the whole flow like this over the Zoom, over a video call. And then let's say the final signing or the final go, yes or no, will be in a physical meeting. Do you think that would be realistic for VCs in general?
I can't really cannot answer that question because
everyone's having the same issue.
I think it really depends.
Everyone has the same issue, right? All the VCs have this issue.
Yeah. But I really cannot answer to that question because I guess it really depends on the person.
Yeah.
If I have to look at myself, honestly, perhaps I'm still learning how to deal with this.
Yeah.
How to actually network virtually.
Yeah.
How to actually get to know people virtually. How to date people virtually.
Yeah.
Put it that way.
Yeah. So, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So I guess I don't know whether there is whether that is feasible or not, but then I guess is we are opportunistic person. The answer is always possible.
Yeah.
Because last time we never think about having an online meeting. Now
exactly.
We do it.
Yeah.
So, but then perhaps it's only it's a journey for me at least.
Yeah.
To really understand what is the best way for me to get to know person if we have to do it on a virtually.
Tizar, looking at your career, I mean, it's been very clear that you've always wanted to move into the investment space, right? I mean, even in the US, it was VC, and then you came back to Indonesia, it was PE, and then now it's VC again. What kind of drove you into the investment space? Or did you have any entrepreneurial experience before that or in college, or was it always been like investments?
Oh, actually, I started my career as a research engineer.
Oh, really?
And yeah, I was a research engineer in semiconductor space. I designed, I did analog integrated circuit design.
Wow.
And only until, I did that only for 3 years though. I invented something for Intel. I did the power management for Intel microprocessor.
Wow.
Long time ago.
It's all electrical engineering, and what?
Huh?
It's all electrical engineering, or like what type of?
Electronic engineering.
Yeah.
So it was patented worldwide, and then from there I joined Hewlett Packard, helped them to transfer the research development team from US to Singapore, and also create a product market for a new product development for the Chinese market back then. And also involved in the acquisition for Indigo printer for HP at the time. And from there, actually, I learned a lot of things about the technology that has been the founding, the fundamental why I'm interested in this space. Yeah. And the reason why I like the VC or PE space, because personally, I can actually be involved in many different industry or different segment, and I can always continue something from zero again.
Yeah.
If I see a new company or a new industry, and basically it's still the same as when I was in doing my engineering life back then.
Yeah.
Because when I did circuit design, every design is always new. Everything, the problem is always new. So I need to invent to come up with a solution, a way how to solve this problem. Yeah, so I guess although I've been switching from engineering to investment, but the thing that excites me still the same is actually how to come up with a solution for a problem, to keep learning about something new.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah, so the creating something new has actually always been there then, eh? Especially if you're like a patented circuit or a patented something that you've built.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
It was really lucky. Actually, the story behind it was very funny. So we already gave the design to Intel. It was just 1 week before the chip being manufactured. But then I did my own research, and then, oh my God, my design has been patented by somebody else. So if I didn't know. So then I call up everyone. Hey, big problem. We have to stop manufacturing. We have to stop everything because this design has been patented by everyone. So I call up my boss. Hey, bad news. But then I came up with something. This is something that had never been done before, and this is risky, but I have done my calculation and simulation. It worked. Are you game to try it on?
Yeah.
But then everyone said, okay, we should do it. And then the people in Intel headquarters also agree with that. And then everything went well. But it was really, lucky, and then in the pressure cooker situation. And
But that's amazing, man. So, Tizar, so actually you're like a global phenomenon then?
Nah, not really. I mean, like...
Modest global phenomenon.
No, it's not global. It's just something really small and not really global.
That's really cool. And Tizar, talking about like talk about entrepreneurs, right? Like you see a lot of entrepreneurs, you talk to a lot of entrepreneurs, and like you said, like you're in the investment, you're in the people business, actually. You're investing in the right entrepreneurs. What are like the main characteristics? What are three main characteristics that you look at besides a deck when you talk to the entrepreneurs? What are three things that you always look for that, you know, or you are a green light, let's say, when you talk to potential investment opportunities?
Yeah. So I've been trying to tell everyone in my team, when we talk to the entrepreneur, it's not always about the business that they want to build.
Hmm.
It's not always about the opportunity, but we need to get to know the person first.
Yeah.
And this is something that happens. Often forgotten by my own team, for example. So really, for me, it's really important to understand why the person actually did this.
Mm.
The real motivation of the person.
Mm.
Why did he quit the job, his previous job, to do this?
Yeah.
Why he's willing to getting less money in the first few years in doing this? Because there are so many other opportunities, but why this? Yeah. So I guess the question why is really important for me, because then I can really understand the motivation of the person. And if I understand the fundamental motivation, I can really help them to find the goal.
Yeah.
So otherwise, I don't know where he wants to go, then it's really difficult for me to be a supporter if I really don't know where he begins with and where he wants to go. And second thing for me is really also about the integrity, and that is really important as well. Because I guess we all want to be successful, but then at the end of the day we live in a finite world, and our life is actually very short in this world. And so I always believe that we need to leave behind a good track record. So it's not about making money quick, but it's about making money right. I think that's really important as well.
Mm.
Yeah. So because if if we have good motivation, good integrity during difficult situation, I guess at least our direction is already firm.
Yeah.
Otherwise, during difficult situation, there are so many temptations to do so many other things, and yeah. don't have a firm direction, and I'm afraid that we might be tempted to do something that might actually jeopardize our yeah. own goal yeah. in the first place. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess those are the into that I really look at.
Yeah. yeah. Such a good point, because especially for startups, it can get kind of messy, right? And it can get kind of messy, yeah. number one. I mean, apart from COVID, but it can get kind of messy in general. A lot of different stakeholders and pressure. So when the foundation is not right, it's, it can be tempting for entrepreneurs to do weird things, or at least not stay focused on the initial North Star that was defined. One final question I want to ask you, right? As we look into the future, someday far away in the future, I Google your name. I Google Tizar Firmansha, but I don't see any profile. There's nothing on LinkedIn. I look at Colibra. I don't see anything. But besides that, I only see three bullet points, and those three bullet points are three lessons that you want to leave the world with. Like, what would those three lessons be?
Okay, yeah, the reason why I mean it's purposely made. We actually don't want to we are the person that prefer to work and less focused on publicity. I guess we would like really to be known for our fruits, our work of our the result of our work, rather than just a lot of news articles.
And
In fact, I was talking to one of the editor of one of the big new media company, okay. and he asked me, "How come you never ask anyone to publicize your exit? Why did the world need to know about that? I mean,
it's so true."
I think so. I mean, like, I guess if really people felt the benefit of our work so far, I think people will talk to other people.
Yeah.
And from there, we actually can get the right attention
yes.
from the right people.
Yeah.
In fact, last year alone, we have reviewed more than 1,000 pitch deck.
Wow.
Just being very shy, media shy. By being media shy, we got 1,000 pitch deck
wow.
in a year. Actually doubled from the previous year. The previous year, we got 450 pitch deck.
Yeah.
So it's really not about being a star in the industry, but focused to work and then deliver result to not only our investors but also our portfolio company.
Yeah. yeah, that's so good, man. So it's more like let the fruits do the talking, and not so much the headlines in the magazines or the online platforms, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I like that a lot. I think that's a really good motion to come to an ending of this session. Tizar, I want to thank you again for your time. Thank you for sharing your expertise. I appreciate you a lot, and I hope to see you soon.
Yeah, I hope so too. I hope that I can fly to Bali and see you in person as well.
It's about time. It's about time. I hope to see you soon, man. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Masters of Cashflow podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, then please share this with a friend that you think would be inspired or could learn something from this. Also, make sure to subscribe to the Masters of Cashflow podcast over on Apple and Spotify. And I'd really appreciate if you can leave a rating and review on Apple and let me know what your biggest takeaway is of this episode. I'm going to leave you with this quote from Robert H. Schuller. Tough times never last, but tough people do. And that's what I want to remind you of today, is that you are tough, and whatever season you're going through right now, keep on going. I'm super grateful for you and wish you all the best.
in pursuing your dreams.